Welcome back. We conclude this first hour today on the Mark Steiner Show as we look at what happened over the weekend with the Democratic debate. We're joined once again by George Zornick, who is Washington editor for The Nation, and Charles Ellison, political strategist and host of the Ellison Report here, WEA Sunday nights at 9. George and Charles, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Hey, good to be here. How you doing, Mark?
Very well.
Thanks for having me.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner, but if you can, call in 410-319-8888. George, let me start with you. The first question I have, these are kind of both political questions here, obviously, we're watching this debate, but I'm curious your thoughts about the strategy of the Democratic National Committee to have these debates, so few of them, and on nights when nobody's watching.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear that they're responding to lobbying from the Hillary Clinton campaign, which was didn't really try to hide early in the process the fact that they wanted fewer debates. And that's certainly rational if you think about it from a political standpoint for her, because you know, she has huge name recognition. She knew she would and continues to maintain a pretty big lead in the polls. So for her, I think at least their calculation was that debates are all downside. The only thing that could happen is that, you know, people could see Bernie Sanders and to a lesser extent Martin O'Malley attacking her. Some of those attacks could stick and sort of lower her star a little bit. So, you know, she lobbied the DNC, which I think looks at her as strategically as the most likely nominee, and so they responded to her sort of complaints. And that's why I think you have not only a lot of weekend debates, but very few debates compared to how many the Republicans are holding. I do think that it was a little bit of a miscalculation on her behalf, because the debates, as I'm sure you know, have been pretty collegial. I mean, that Sanders is not out here
right,
ripping her to shreds.
Mm-hmm.
And she's taking herself off of TV. I mean, the Republicans are on primetime all the time. They had 11 million more people watching their most recent debate as opposed to the most recent Democratic one. So I would think this hasn't really been thought totally through.
Charles, what's your take here?
This has been a really big strategic miscalculation and blunder, not just on the part of the Clinton campaign, but also on the part of the Democratic National Committee. Just sort of giving them the benefit of the doubt, I'm sure they didn't envision that Republicans would be getting this much play, would be sucking up this much free media advertising oxygen as they have during this cycle. So giving them some benefit of the doubt. But when you have the opposing party dominating so much time, dominating so much of the conversation of the national discourse on a wide array of issues, and dominating that with their perspective, that really doesn't bode too well for the party. It doesn't bode too well for who the eventual Democratic nominee will be. We presume that's Hillary Clinton. And so you have a situation here where folks are thinking, I mean, you talk to average folks in a grocery store line, and they think that only Republicans are running for president because all they're seeing debating on TV is Republicans, a Republican presidential candidate. So it's you're basically giving, at least from a media standpoint, in terms of the national conversation, you're giving up all of your leverage, all of your branding. You're giving it up to Republicans by one whole doing. I'm not even watching Saturday night. I'll admit, I'm not even watching Republican debate. I mean, this is the weekend.
You mean Democrat.
Yeah, Democratic debate that came out this past Saturday.
Right.
I'm watching it after it happens when I have a little bit of time on like a weekday, maybe like on a Monday or something.
Right. You have no choice but to watch it.
Yeah, when I have no choice but to watch it. Yeah, I mean, Star Wars came out this weekend. Come on. I mean, come on, guys. I mean, Star Wars comes out this weekend. You put it on ABC. Who's watching ABC at night unless there's like a college football game? I mean, let's be realistic here. And so, you know, I mean, are you really trying to get the message out to average voters?
So what's the politics of this? And especially, George, given that you've seen the last presidential election when Democratic turnout was lower, and many states Democratic turnout was lower, which led to a number of Republican victories as well. So what's the political thinking here?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to suss out because, you know, I think that's absolutely right that they're in an election where they need turnout. It's a totally counterintuitive proposal to take the candidates off national TV. I didn't watch it. I was watching the Jets Cowboys game on Saturday night. I didn't.
Right, exactly.
Monday morning, and this is what I'm. You know, sort of. I guess I should admit it. This is what I'm paid to do, and I still didn't watch it right away.
Right, right. You didn't watch it right.
None of it's right.
You wait for the recap.
Right.
exactly. Yeah, I mean, you know, the only thing I'll say, and it's sort of accidental, Democrats couldn't have anticipated this. I think they would be a lot more worried and think of it as much more a big mistake if these Republican debates were a lot of serious candidates who were, you know, having these really fascinating, engaging discussions and sort of dominating the market with their views. I think what happens when these Republican debates do get all this national play, I mean, every time Donald Trump is on TV talking, it's sort of a net negative for the Republican Party and probably a boon for Democrats every time there is one of these debates. And, you know, all these guys are just saying all these ridiculous things and Trump is out there throwing his insults. I think they've kind of been bailed out by that a little bit. But there's no way they could have anticipated that, and giving all this free media time to Republicans overall was still a pretty bad idea.
Go ahead, Charles.
I would sort of say George makes a real good point there, but I sort of push back just a little bit in the sense that you know, Democrats have to be very careful, and you know, a lot of folks, a lot of media pundits have made this mistake over the past several years of being, you know, a little bit dismissive of that persistent 30% in the polls, that persistent working class white populist 30% that created that Tea Party revolution that we saw back, particularly in the 2010 congressional midterms, that still dominated the conversation, and that fuels a lot of that or galvanized a lot of that energy, that voter enthusiasm that you're seeing on the right, because that's a really big worry that I hear from a lot of Democratic operatives, a lot of Democratic strategists, is are our folks going to turn out? You know, they get a feeling that Republicans are probably going to turn out in 2016 once again from all of that enthusiasm. So, you know, so they may seem like a clownish bunch, but at the end of the day, they're noisy and everyone hears them. And so they're sort of dominating the discourse right now.
I'm going to play this quick clip here from the debate, but then come back with a question about who may actually be the Democratic nominee and get into talking a little bit about it. The common wisdom is Hillary. But this is the clip where Martin O'Malley and the other two going at it for a moment. We'll talk about this in a second. Let's listen to this.
ISIL videos, ISIL training videos are telling lone wolves the easiest way to buy a combat assault weapon in America is at a gun show. And it's because of the flip-flopping political approach of Washington that both of my two colleagues on this stage have represented there for the last 40 years. We need common sense.
Let's calm down a little bit, Martin.
Yeah, let's tell the truth, Martin.
I am telling
the truth. Let's maybe
Secretary
have some Clinton. Rules here, commentators.
We will.
All right.
Let me just establish.
So I'm sorry, but when I saw it the first time, I just cracked up.
Right.
But I mean,
this is a funny moment.
It is a very funny moment. But I think that this is one of those moments where first of all, Bernie Sanders is very funny. With whoa,
right,
very
right.
Funny guy to start with. But I think Martin O'Malley kind of destroyed whatever goodwill and candidacy he had at this moment. I mean, it just seemed to be shot down by the audience who booed him, and now this happened to him.
Yeah,
he seemed to try so hard to be genuous. He was almost disingenuous.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's hard for him to take off for some reason. And
yeah.
It was, you know, it should have been a moment. I'm sure he was hoping that would have been a moment where he could capture the audience, where he could capture the headways, make a headline, and finally sort of catapult out
right.
in front. But it just ended up falling. And you know, this Democratic primary and the tone, the tenor of the Democratic debates is all about Democratic presidential candidates contrasting themselves. With Republican
right.
candidates by saying, hey, you know what, at least every time we talk, every time we debate, we take the high road.
Right. That has been George?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, O'Malley's in a tough spot where he's so far down, and it has been a little bit inexplicable to me. I didn't think that he would win or even necessarily win a primary state, but I thought he would be doing a lot better than he is now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's so far down, he's like a team that's down in football. He's just kind of taking shots down the field. He's really... kind of Hail Mary, low percentage plays, but he's got to do something to get himself in front of voters. It's sort of the all news is good news thing. I mean, we just played the clip. It's, hey, we're talking about O'Malley. You know, it's something. I think
right.
he's just
yeah.
struggling to get over that low bar. But, yeah, I mean, if you look at the debate the other night, that was definitely a theme. It was something that both Sanders and Clinton touched on in their closing statements, which is, look, we may have differences, but, you know, I think Bernie Sanders' line was, on our worst day, we're still way better than any of the Republican candidates. And I think that'll be a big factor going forward. No matter who wins, the biggest motivating factor for Democrats to turn out may not be, I love Hillary Clinton. It may be, I'm really, really scared of Donald Trump or mm-hmm. Ted Cruz or whoever it ends up being.
Right, and I think that leads me to my next thought, which is that the presumed wisdom is that Hillary Clinton has this nomination locked up. Mm-hmm. But let me ask you both politically: is that, do you think that's the truth? Think that Bernie Sanders has no shot at winning this nomination? What do you think, George?
I wouldn't say no shot, but I think it's a small shot. I think, you know, he seems to be doing very well in New Hampshire. He may well win that state. Less optimistic about Iowa, but who knows? But I think when you get to sort of the bigger states, the big Super Tuesday, where you have close to half the country voting, and I'm just not sure that he has the money nor the kind of organizational support that Hillary Clinton enjoys, nor frankly the support of minority voters in the Democratic Party to really succeed. I mean, if you look at his numbers in South Carolina or any state, frankly, that isn't Iowa or New Hampshire, which are these like white-dominated states, he really doesn't do that well. And I think ultimately that's going to be what trips him up.
Yeah, the question that really hasn't been asked since Bernie Sanders entered the race is, you know, what sort of experience do you have interfacing with populations of color? Because, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, he's a senator from Vermont. Vermont's like, it's barely 2% black. You know, he was the mayor of a town, Burlington, which is barely 2% black. So that's not to say that that's his fault. That's not just, I mean, it's beyond his control. But that influences, that shapes sort of where the direction of his campaign. And so George is exactly right. I mean, I could see him winning New Hampshire because that's his market. I don't think so much. Iowa voters being a bit finicky, and also Clinton campaign. It's all about machine politics in Iowa, and they've been able to establish really good political ties there in Iowa. South Carolina and other, like some of those southern states where black Democratic primary voters dominate, I don't think it's going to happen.
Two things quickly before we run out of time. I mean, Bernie Sanders has been in that Democratic race the one candidate who seems to have taken Black Lives Matter and other issues, those issues seriously. Mm-hmm. After being beaten up on stage, he took a step backwards and said, "Well, wait a minute, let me reexamine this." There was a real shift. I don't know if that's enough to help him out in South Carolina or Maryland or California or anywhere else, but he clearly did make a shift.
I'll let George enter here and say, I'll go on a limb here and say that I think Sanders' biggest challenge is more optical. And I say this as, you know, kind of cynically and sort of as a pure political strategist. Sanders is like, you know, the recast of Larry David. And it's hard to break out of that. I mean, it is. I mean, when Larry David did the Bernie Sanders impression on Saturday Night Live, it was like, well, you know, where you been, Larry? Because Bernie's been playing you the whole time, you know, and it's hard to break out of that. And it's just like he doesn't. It's not like Barack Obama in 2008. You had this cosmetically just very attractive candidate on a lot of levels. Sanders not being – he's not that call-and-response candidate that black voters gravitate to. He doesn't have that. And they may agree with him on a number of issues, but he's not that kind of call-and-response motivational, inspirational candidate that they like in their candidates.
George?
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, I think one thing a shift we've seen a lot from Bernie, though I think it probably was too late, is that before he was running for president, he was one of Obama's strongest critics from within the Democratic Party. Mm. And he, I think, too often put that in personal terms, where it was Obama did this, he did that, he sold out on this or that. And I think when you couch it, someone clearly told him at the start of this campaign, like, you can have policy differences, but don't make it personal to Obama, because, you know, as the first black president and someone who was widely beloved by a lot of people who voted for him, you can't put that in personal terms. And I think he made that shift, but I wonder if it's too late. I wonder if a lot of people, and not just black voters, people who are really, you know, young millennials, who this is the first president they voted for and they love him, even if they were tempted to agree with the substance of Sanders' critiques, I think when he made it personal, he probably lost a lot of people.
Just a tweet came in. Keisha tweeted in, the sound of music was on, which always trumps politics. Always.
It always does. Right, exactly. Yeah, Saturday night.
Yeah.
Holidays but, on the eve of the holiday
right.
break. Yeah, exactly. Keisha's spot on with that.
But looking ahead for a moment, after the conventions, if Hillary Clinton is the nominee, mm-hmm. and whether it's Mr. Trump or Mr. Cruz right now, or maybe whoever else might be the Republican nominee, can Hillary Clinton pull back the 2008 voters, ensuring a national victory for Democrats? I mean, that you know, because she's seen as all the things you said positively here, but she's also been seen as the candidate of the establishment, the old guard. Is she going to excite communities of color, excite young people to come out and vote?
It's still a long way to go. I mean, we're really kind of still.
I'm not saying Bernie Sanders can either. I'm just asking.
Right. We're still an eternity away from November. As far as, you know, certain indicators right now show that it's doubtful. Like if you were to hold the election today, you'd have a Republican winning the White House. She's just not, as far as Clinton, she's not getting that kind of enthusiasm from millennials, particularly female millennials. Between the ages of 18 and 35, they're just not feeling her like that.
I have one who switched from her to Bernie.
Right, yeah,
right?
You've seen a lot of that.
Right? So.
You know, you would expect, particularly from white female millennials, you hear that generate a lot of enthusiasm
right.
around her. As far as black voters are concerned, for the most part, she has the majority of black voters, but she hasn't reached that 90% threshold. She needs at least 90% of the collective black vote to win, 90% or more. You know, a lot of polls you're saying she's like hovering it. She's still in the 80s.
And
that's not the kind of super enthusiasm.
And the same with millennials
needs.
At 30% of white voters, and the same with Mexican and Puerto Rican voters, and other certain Latino populations in this community in America as well. George?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. The early numbers certainly don't look like that, and I don't think she will replicate Obama's success. I think two things will happen if and when she wins the nomination. Number one, you will see Obama, who right now is focused very much on governing and just really isn't getting involved because he doesn't want to, you know, get ahead of Democratic voters in choosing a nominee. I think in part to address basically to replicate the Obama enthusiasm, you've got to get Obama out on the trail. I mean, he's
right.
kind of saying he's already run his last campaign. Well, I tell you, he hasn't, because he's going to be unofficially on the ticket this time around. I mean, he's going to be out in those swing states. He's going to be out campaigning for Hillary. And the other thing, I would circle back to what I said earlier, it's going to be turn out the base by motivating fear of what the country would look like if Ted Cruz was president. You know, telling people, telegraphing to young millennial voters, okay, you know, Hillary Clinton has been an establishment person. You may remember her from when you were a toddler. You don't have to love her, but just imagine what Ted Cruz is going to do to the Supreme Court or environmental regulations or on women's health issues or things like that. So I think that will be the two-pronged strategy. Is it going to work? I don't know. I mean, that's certainly
right.
what I'm sure the top question on the mind of Hillary's people is right now.
So I'd love to go on more. We'll do this more in the coming weeks.
Right.
George Zornick is Washington editor for The Nation. Charles Ellison is political strategist and a host of the Ellison Report here on WEAA on Sunday nights at 9. Also writes incredibly interesting pieces for The Root and other places that you can link to on our website, and link to George's work, which he does really incredible work for The Nation as well, on our website at steinershow.org. George Zornick and Charles Ellison, thank you both so much.
Hey, thanks so much, Mark.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
You too. And we're going to take a very brief break. When we come back after this news break, it's time to talk with State Senator Catherine Pugh, who's seeking to become the next mayor of Baltimore. Don't go away.